Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org. Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Delighted to be here with you on this Thursday afternoon, or maybe it's a Thursday evening, or maybe even a Friday morning where you are, wherever you are around the world. We're glad you're here with us. We really are glad you're here with us. And we got a good show for you. Second hour, Tim will be here. We'll do Ask Me Anything second hour. This hour, the questions will be about the Eucharist. If you have questions about the Eucharist, especially, I don't know if especially is quite the right way to say it, but we really just want people who are not Catholic to feel welcome to call this hour. If you have questions about the Eucharist, the number is 888-318-7884. And I'll tell you why I kind of set it up that way, because our guest this hour is Adrian Lawson, and I asked him how to introduce. I said, "Are you a podcaster? Are you? I just don't know the words." And he said, "Theologian and philosopher." So,
yes,
he's very humble. here is our theologian and philosopher YouTuber. He does a wonderful bit of work on YouTube, helping people understand the Catholic faith and also defending the Catholic faith. It's called Sips with Sarah. He's been here before, but we're glad he's back again. This time, first time in studio with us. Adrian, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, and I look forward to having some really good conversations about the Eucharist.
Do people call you Adrian or Sips?
It depends who.
It depends on the context?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I get called Sips. I get called Sarah. Sometimes people think Sarah is my last name. But
oh, they
it's
do.
Not. So, and some people say Sierra.
I know.
Yeah.
That's yeah. We've gone over that
yeah.
before. Yeah. Again, 888-318-7884. Well, but the reason that the I want to get to know Adrian a little bit, and I'd like to let listeners get to know him a little bit. But one of the things that is among the many interesting things about him, including the many names people call him, is that it's the Eucharist that was his catalyst to come into the Catholic faith. So can we do a little faith journey with you for
sure.
a minute? I'll pretend like I'm doing the journey home with you
yeah.
or something like that.
Yeah.
You should be on they should get you on the journey home. It's such a good show. You know, it's my favorite TV show.
Oh, really?
I love that show. I absolutely
nice.
Love it. I think it's like almost perfect.
I've seen a little bit of it. It's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because both of them, they do great interviews. And it's stories. And what do you want? You want to watch stories. That's
yeah.
what you want on TV. And they're really good stories.
That
All right.
Makes
so
sense.
You started out in the womb. What religion were you?
I was brought up very young in Protestantism, non-denominationalism, very Pentecostal leaning.
Okay. Where
yeah.
do you go to church when you're a non-denominational, very Pentecostal leaning? Is it one church your whole life, or do you go from church to church? How does that work?
Let's see. So I kind of have a little bit of a tumultuous childhood, I guess, but I kind of bounced around from different households, and each household kind of had its own church. So more recently in my Protestant journey, I was going to a Calvary Chapel. So like an evangelical.
Oh, I know Calvary Chapel
a,
very
yeah.
well. Yeah. Pastor
yeah.
Chuck, I used to listen to him on the radio.
I was at the church
God
that
rest
he founded.
His soul.
Yeah.
Oh, you were?
Yeah.
Yeah. I enjoyed Pastor Chuck, and then one day he got a question. You know, he used to do a question and answer show on the radio. I think I've told this story before, but the question was, who's the whore of Babylon?
Mm.
Guess what Pastor Chuck said?
I think I have a guess.
Go ahead. I want you to actually guess.
Is it the Catholic Church?
Yes, it was the Catholic Church.
How did I know?
Which is not possible. Anyways, I guess it was in Pastor Chuck's mind possible. But
right.
So that deepened my sense that as much as I always liked evangelical Christian radio. Hmm. Sometimes it was wild. Sometimes
yeah.
it was crazy. But there were people that were sincerely trying to share the person of Jesus Christ.
Yep.
But then when I would hear things like that, I'd be like, that's why we need Catholic radio. Because
yeah.
you can't just, that's
true.
Stuff sits out there. So how long ago would I have, would it have been that I found you in a Calvary Chapel church?
Ooh, probably about 4.5 to 5 years ago.
Okay. Did you ever bring coffee into the service?
Oh, yeah.
You did?
Every day, or every Sunday that I was there, I had coffee.
Have you ever been to a religious service where there was a drummer?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You get what I'm getting at. Calvary, I mean, there is this kind of reputation that these are coffee houses and entertainment venues. Mm-hmm. Is that merely my Catholic prejudice, or is there something to that?
I mean, I want to be charitable. I learned a lot.
Why,
there.
Adrian? Okay, why? Yes. No, I'm just kidding. Please do be charitable. Yeah.
No, I mean, there's a lot of great sermons that I heard that, you know, expounded right. on the scriptures and taught me things that I wouldn't have known otherwise. And they get very deep. I mean, in a 40-minute sermon, you can cover a lot of, like, oh, in the original Greek, this is what it said, and this is what that meant, and here's some history and things like that. So there was some good lessons that I heard at that church specifically. But I've been to some where it is very much just a motivational speech and not a lot of practical information that I can benefit from in my day-to-day life, but just some feel-good stuff typically and some, you know, happy music and some coffee is always nice.
And coffee and music and all these things are good, but you, yeah. what, felt a call to what? What led you to go, I'm going to take a different direction in my spiritual life?
Yeah, so I had for a long time felt that while I was, you know, happy with what was going on Sundays at my Calvary Chapel, I wasn't feeling a guidance in what to do in my day-to-day life. Like, there wasn't a daily prayer structure or anything. You know, you could buy this devotional or that devotional or the pastor's devotional or whatever, but there wasn't something that the entire church was doing that I think that's what drew me to the Catholic Church initially was, it's beautiful. There's a liturgy of the hours that you can pray. Everybody prays the rosary. Not everybody, but most Catholics that I know pray the rosary.
The good ones do.
Right.
Oh, not.
No. Most Catholics that I know pray the rosary every day. So there's some kind of unity in day-to-day practice, not just in meeting on Sundays, which is really beautiful to me.
Right.
And then it really came to a head when I was looking into, I was getting ready to get baptized at my Calvary Chapel church. And I was looking into, what does that mean?
Wait a second. Were you getting rebaptized, or this was your actual first baptism?
First baptism.
Okay. So then you started to think about, what does baptism mean?
Yeah. I was like, why am I doing this? I was excited about it. And, okay. But what does this mean for me? Like, what decision am I making by doing this? That was when I first learned that there were different positions on this, because I had only been raised knowing the Protestant position on it. And not just the Protestant, but, you know, because even Protestants will disagree on baptism. But the, like, modern Protestant, non-denominational, evangelical positions on baptism. And through that, I learned that the early church believed different things than I did on baptism, and that really threw me for a loop. And then that also led me to looking into the Eucharist, and it was just a domino effect after that.
And so you start to be drawn towards a sacramental kind of, the religion that Jesus founded, a sacramental religion. And so you begin to intuit that that's in the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. So you became a Lutheran.
Exactly.
Is that what happened?
Makes perfect sense.
Well, make it make sense for me. Yeah. Why did that happen? Okay. Why you said, I need more. I need sacraments. The Catholic Church is probably it, but I'll become a Lutheran.
Yeah. So I'll try to make that make sense. So what happened was, my buddy and I had read about the church history a bit, and he was actually in training to become a pastor at that church. I won't say his name, but he's a great guy. And we were all excited, like, oh, I think actually Catholicism is true. And I think both of us maybe didn't know that there was such an anti-Catholic position that many Protestants held.
Oh.
So I was just so ignorant of church history that I didn't even know what the Protestant Reformation was or any of that.
Right.
So I told my grandparents, who are wonderful people and who, without whom I would not have become a Christian at all, and also my dad. But so no disrespect to them, but I called them and talked to them about, hey, I'm going to become a Catholic. And I thought it'd be exciting. I thought they would see this as like, you're graduating to becoming like a really traditional Christian or something. My own ignorance.
Record scratch. That's not. No,
that is not what happened.
They hadn't forgotten the Reformation.
They had not.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so this was that's fascinating to me, because I do think with many young people today, the categories are not as clear as they are for the parents and the grandparents.
Right.
And there's a sense of, like, I remember not too long, a few years ago, talking with a young woman who, very young, she was a teenager, and about being a Christian, and I said something about her being a Protestant. She said, I'm not a Protestant. And I said, your church is a Protestant church. She said, no, it's just a Christian church. And she wasn't making a point. She was not making a rhetorical point. She was expressing reality as she understood it. And right. it was completely without any history. It was disconnected from history. It was, there was Jesus, there's the Bible, and there's my church. Like, yeah. What are you talking about? Protestant. So I do think that that's, that maybe there's a little bit of an advantage in that. Like you said, because people may be able to more openly think through where is the church? The question, where is the church?
Right. Yeah. For me, it was learning, because I hadn't known that this happened, like, or at least much about it. I was like, wait, okay, so the early church believed that baptism actually saves you. And they believed that the Eucharist is actually Jesus. And they believed all these other things that my church definitely does not believe any of those things. So somewhere along the lines, my church was the one that kind of changed something arbitrarily and went off the rails a little bit. So that was what led to me. It was my own ignorance. And then discovering that, that led to me looking into, okay, what churches
do line up
with?
But how did you find that out? Like, did you look on the internet? How does somebody find that stuff out nowadays?
Yes.
Was there a Catholic who told you these things? Did you find it in a book? Did you look on the internet?
Yeah.
What was the actual, cause of this insight in your brain?
So, I made a video about this, and some people have quibbled with me on the title of it. But I have a video called "How Gavin Ortland Made Me Catholic." Now, okay, we can talk about the title if that's appropriate. Whatever.
Among the people who hates that, it probably Gavin Ortland.
Yes.
Okay.
And I get it. But through his book, that's how I learned that there was a difference in the early church and my church. So his book is called Theological Retrieval for Evangelicals, and he was trying to reconcile the modern evangelical church and the ancient church. I don't remember all the arguments he made, but apparently it wasn't very convincing to me because I still felt like my church is definitely not in line with the original church. So I looked at, okay, well, what churches do align with that? Catholicism was number one on the list. That's why I was telling my family I'm going to become Catholic. But they quickly scared me out of that. So to have a happy middle ground, I love my grandparents. I don't want to argue with them for the rest of their lives. I don't know how much time I have left with them. So I was like, how do I, you know, join a church that is closer to the early church, but also not ruin my relationship with my grandparents and possibly other family? So the Lutheran Church was that happy middle ground, I guess, for a time.
All right. Well, we got you to the Lutheran Church, but we got to take a break. So we'll get you out of the Lutheran Church into the – I shouldn't say out of the Lutheran Church because there is some continuity there. But get you at least physically out of the Lutheran Church into the Catholic Church. So we'll do that after the break.
Sounds good.
Our guest, Adrian Lawson, Sips with Sarah is his YouTube channel, podcast. Lots and lots of people are finding out about the Catholic Church from this young man who found it out for himself. We'll continue the conversation right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
We're here for you. Call now. Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Magnificat. Published monthly, Magnificat features texts of daily mass, prayers, articles, meditations, art commentaries, and more, in step with the liturgical rhythm of the Church, on the web at magnificat.com.
He captivates viewers with thought-provoking political and cultural reporting that resonates with Catholics and people of faith.
We've seen this kind of rough and frankly tyrannical treatment of others who are devoted to the old Latin Mass. Tell me what you're hearing from those who frequent the Latin Mass, particularly the young. What is the challenge here for these bishops?
The World Over with Raymond Arroyo, tonight 8 Eastern, on EWTN Radio and Television.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. This hour, we're talking with Adrian Lawson, who came into the Catholic Church because he wanted the Eucharist, frankly. And if you'd like to talk about the Eucharist, if you're a non-Catholic, if you're not a Catholic, and you'd like to ask a question about the Eucharist, Adrian would be happy to take your question, 888-318-7884. And if you're a Catholic who'd like to talk about the Eucharist, he'd also like to talk with you, 888-318-7884. I do not know how much you've been paying attention to secular media has discovered the Catholic Church in recent months. A few weeks ago, Abby Cornish over at CNN Radio did a full hour on why is the Catholic Church suddenly so hot, and talked with a wonderful reporter, a journalist and thinker, and whose name is escaping me. I will think of it in a minute because I was very impressed with her. Trying to understand why are people attracted to the Catholic Church. One thing I think they missed in their conversation, and it was an hour conversation, they couldn't get to everything, is that there are young people like Adrian Lawson who are taking it upon themselves to use the current means of communication to reach out to people and say, here's why you should be Catholic. Here's why that thing you think is an obstacle to you being Catholic is not really an obstacle. Or shouldn't be an obstacle. His is called Sips with Sarah. All you have to do is type into your machine, Sips with Sarah, and you will come upon it. When we went to the break, we had talked with Adrian about how he moved from a non-denominational Christianity into the Lutheran Church. I'd like to know now, Lutherans do have a sacramental theology. It's not the same sacramental theology that the Catholic Church has, but Lutherans believe in sacraments. They offer sacraments. So why didn't you feel satisfied there?
Yeah. So I learned a lot while being a Lutheran. I learned a lot. There's a lot of beauty there that I appreciated. However, I still felt in my time there that there were things that were not the same from the original church to the current Lutheran church. So when I look at the ancient church, there are other issues that, you know, Catholics get a lot of flack for, like confession, and the Lutheran Church today, at least in the branch that I was in the LCMS, which is a very conservative branch of Lutheranism, they believe
Missouri Synod.
Yes,
I was testing myself to see if I could figure it out. Yeah,
yeah. they believe in confession, and you can have private confession with the pastor, but they don't believe that that is necessary. They believe that the same thing happens when you make your confession in the beginning of the liturgy. So.
The general confession.
The general confession.
Of liturgy. Okay, yeah.
That covers everything and you're good. So that didn't sit right with me because that doesn't seem to be what the early church
confess your sins to one another.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, confession to a priest. It didn't seem that this was supposed to be just something you do in the congregation. You make some general prayer and that covers all of your venial and mortal sins. And I don't even think they had I could be wrong about this, so don't quote me, but I don't remember hearing about venial and mortal sins within Lutheranism at all.
Okay.
So there were just a couple of things where I was like, okay, well, I feel like I'm closer, but I don't feel like this is the fullness yet. And then there were beautiful Catholic practices like the rosary, where I just thought that's a beautiful thing to do. Why don't we have anything beautiful like that? And then I found things like the Lutheran rosary, which was kind of like a, you know, same structure, but with different prayers, none of them directed to Mary. And so it was just like we were trying to copy some things because we recognized the beauty. However, it just didn't feel like I was in the fullness of the truth yet. And then one of the last straws for me were the Marian dogmas. Famously, I said when I came on before that I was reading Tim Staples' book, Behold Your Mother, which was very good. And I just wasn't finding any clear teachings on Mary within Lutheranism one way or another. Mm-hmm. It was kind of like up to you, but most people reject a lot of Marian dogmas. But Martin Luther himself accepted at least three of the four Marian dogmas that Catholics today accept. So I still didn't, it just felt like there were some missing pieces to me that I just couldn't make sense out of. And then the final one was the fact that the canon that Lutherans have and that all Protestants today have was not in line with what the early church had. Changing scripture, it just really made me uncomfortable. So those were kind of like all of the things that were going through my head towards the end of my time as a Lutheran.
Were there any like, I don't know, podcasters? Like, I mean, I know a lot of people come to the Catholic Church because they see someone like Matt Frad who does all these wonder, or they watch The Journey Home, you know, mm-hmm. or they, was there something like that that was effective for you? I mean, Tim's book clearly was a catalyst. But I'm just wondering if in the whole Catholic media sphere we have, was there anybody that stood out?
Yes. There, Matt Frad, you mentioned, he kept Catholicism on my radar because he if you watch his show, he has a very beautiful spirituality, a very beautiful humility. And it was inspiring to me. And I was like, okay, well, here's a Catholic who seems to be doing something right, because I see his humility and I want that too. Lila Rose is another great one who's been very effective in the pro-life movement. Just the fruits of these people, not necessarily, they weren't making arguments for Catholicism, but seeing their fruits come out in all these different areas was really inspiring to me. And it made me think that there might be something to this Catholic Church, that they have all these great people on the forefront of some of these major social issues. And then Catholic Answers was great as well. I'm not just saying that because I'm here, but in some of my questions about the papacy, or obviously Tim Staples about Mary, and just some of these questions that I was still wrestling with, Catholic Answers was very helpful in sorting all that out.
And now you're helping other people, or at least that is all the signs would suggest that.
Trying.
You want to do that. What was done for you, what you received for free, you want to share with others for free, as Jesus said. I mean, I'm paraphrasing Jesus because I'm not a Protestant. I can't remember the exact words. The number, by the way, if you want to talk about the Eucharist with our guest, Adrian Lawson from Sips with Sarah, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. So tell me about how you came into the Catholic Church then. So there's this. And I honestly, I sometimes worry about this. So I maybe you could help me with this. There's this online Catholicism that people get exposed to, and it has a certain tenor, it has a certain vocabulary, it has a, and certainly all the people that you mentioned would be part of that. Mm-hmm. And then there's what happens in the parish, and that has a different tenor and a different vocabulary. And so when you finally approached a parish to say, I want to become a Catholic, I want to know, what was your experience like there?
Well, they were very helpful. I came to the parish and I had an appointment set up because I had been thinking about this for a long time. So I'd been emailing back and forth with the parish for a little while. When I showed up, it was very casual. It was very, you know, I had this image going into it that it was going to be this high pressure situation because the Catholic Church, it could seem so intimidating.
Like they were going to give you some kind of test or something?
Yeah.
Right.
But I came in and then I went in.
Did you have to pass through a metal detector and then one of those things where you put your hands up and like at the airport? No, yep. You did not. I know.
No.
All right. So it first of all, the first impression then is it's not as uptight as I thought it was going to be.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. So then tell me more.
I mean, the process was actually quite simple. That's why whenever somebody comes to my channel and I'm doing a live stream or they comment or something and they're like, how do I become a Catholic? I'm like, you literally just go to your local parish and tell them that you want to become a Catholic. It's actually not that intimidating. So signed up, gave them my information. They wanted, you know, my baptismal certificate to make sure that I was validly baptized prior. Otherwise, they would have to baptize me or conditional baptism. Any information on, like, do you have previous marriages, things like this, anything that might hinder the confirmation process. And once all of that basic information was communicated, I was able to just start attending OCIA classes. And about a year and a half later, I was getting confirmed.
You had, I can't remember, did you receive baptism before?
I had been baptized before at Calvary Chapel.
At Calvary Chapel.
It was
was there any problem with the Catholic Church accepting that baptism?
No.
No.
Once I gave him my certificate, it says Adrian Lawson was baptized in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. That's it.
Yeah. And God bless the Calvary Chapel for that.
Yeah.
For your salvation.
Yeah.
Even if they didn't think it was your salvation, it is, in fact, your salvation.
Yep.
But so you received then on Easter Vigil or another day?
Easter Sunday.
Easter Sunday, really?
Yeah, of 2024.
And why Easter Sunday? Just because usually they do it at night on the Easter Vigil. Do you know?
I'm not sure. At my parish, at least, we do the baptisms on Easter Vigil.
Oh.
So baptism, if you're getting baptized, you do the baptism, confirmation, first Eucharist on Easter Vigil. If you're getting confirmed, you have a valid baptism before, then you just do that on Sunday. I think maybe.
Oh, maybe they have a lot of people.
They do have a lot of people, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Do you want to say the parish or no?
I'd rather not. Just
you've fallen out with them. I'm sorry.
No, they're great. I am so happy with my parish. Yeah. I love it. But just to avoid.
That's a good problem to have, though, that you have so many people. And certainly the church doesn't, there is no time where you have to get accepted into the church.
Right.
You can do it any day of the year. Well, that may not be true. I don't think Good Friday you could be accepted into the church. There may be a few others, but for the most part, any day is fine. But we tend towards the vigil.
Yeah.
So, what was that like for you?
It was beautiful and very powerful. Receiving the Eucharist for the first time, I was like, wow, because I had received what I thought was the Eucharist previously at, the communion wafer and the grape juice at my non-denominational or evangelical churches, and then what I thought was the Eucharist in the Lutheran church, but coming into the Catholic church, I was like, this is the real deal, apostolic succession and all that. So it was exciting, very exciting time. I wasn't familiar with the confirmation part of things, so that was kind of a surprise for me, getting the chrism oil on my forehead. It smelled really good. So that was cool. It was just a really positive experience. Really grateful for it. And then recently, my wife came into the church.
Oh, praise God.
Yeah, so she actually didn't have a baptism before, so she got baptized.
She got the whole deal.
Yeah, baptized, confirmation, and Eucharist on Easter Vigil. It was so beautiful. Yeah, I was like, man, your baptism was way cooler than mine, at least on the outside. The same things were accomplished.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's really not about cool.
It's not.
Baptism. It's the opposite of cool.
Yeah.
It's the being desperately in need of a Lord and Savior. Which
Very
is,
true.
Yes. All right, well, our guest, Adrian Lawson from Sips with Sarah, will take some calls on the Eucharist when we come back. If you've got calls about the Eucharist, whether you're Catholic or not, 888-318-7884. Each Catholic is obliged to spread and defend the faith by word and deed. Well, we're here to help. Join special guests Chris Stefanik, Dr. David Anders, Father Jeff Kirby, and all your favorite Catholic Answers apologists this September 25th through 28th in beautiful San Diego for the Catholic Answers Conference. Our theme, Go Make Disciples. Enjoy 4 days of faith, fun, and fellowship. Use promo code EARLY to save $50 when you register today at CatholicAnswersConference.com.
Lots of people have big questions about Catholicism. It needs a big book of answers, and now it's got one. The Big Book of Catholic Answers is filled with helpful replies to more than 250 questions about the faith. Questions about God, salvation history, the Creed, the Bible, the list goes on and on. Order your copy of the Big Book of Catholic Answers today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Why do Catholics pray to dead people, bow to statues, venerate relics? And where do we find any of this stuff in the Bible? In the delightful book, The Saints Pray for You, Dr. Carla Broussard convincingly defends the ancient Christian belief rooted in Scripture that the saints care for us, that they're our allies. Order your copy of The Saints Pray for You today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Our Lord needs articulate defenders of the truth to spread the joy of the Catholic faith. Catholic Answers Monthly Giving Club, Society 315, helps you fulfill the call in 1 Peter 3:15 to always be prepared to make a defense for the hope that is in you. For as little as $10 a month, you'll help Catholics grow in faith, bring lapsed Catholics home, and lead non-Catholics to the truth. Go to CASociety315.com and join today.
I'm Deacon Harold Burke Sivers. Join me for Beacon of Truth today at 4 p.m. Eastern.
On the next Beacon of Truth, we're talking about St. Anthony and Soulful Psalm 102.
Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Tim Staples, second hour. Ask Me Anything with Tim, second hour. This hour, we're having a great time. At least I am. I'm having a great time talking with Adrian Lawson. His friends call him Sips because he's got a YouTube channel called Sips with Sarah, and you should check it out. And or maybe you've got friends who are they like to tackle questions of the faith. They like to engage with it. Maybe they're even thinking, well, I might be open to this Catholicism thing. Let them check out Sips with Sarah on that YouTube channel. Or you can just call right now and talk with Adrian, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. I will let you know, Adrian asked me at the break to promote his book from Catholic Answers Press. He said, could you tell people to get my book from Catholic Answers Press? And I said, what book did you write for us? And he goes, I haven't. It's just that if you say it on air, then they're going to have to publish my book. So excellent thinking. You are an entrepreneur.
Yep. Everybody clip this and make sure to repost it. And
do you know the publishing department is on the other side of this building?
Okay.
I don't think they listen to this show. Like, I don't think they care what we say in here. I think they're busy doing things.
That's true. So, they got real things to
do. So I'm not sure about your strategy, Adrian.
That's true.
You want to take a call? Shall we chat a little more? What do you want to do?
We can take the call.
Brave man, ready to take calls. I've lost my place. Let me find it. Oh, yeah.
Oh, sure.
Patrick in New York City. New York City on Facebook. Hello, Patrick.
Hello, Si.
Nice to talk to you.
I have a question that follows up on the theme we are talking about, which is the evangelization of young people. And what's changed? Has the Catholic Church changed, or has American culture changed? That invites people into the Catholic Church now, which wasn't the case maybe 10 years ago.
What a great question, and you're the perfect guy to ask it because it happened to you.
Yeah. I mean, I can speak for myself and the folks that I know who have come into the church. I think the internet has changed a lot of things, whereas the Catholic Church maybe before seemed like I thought it was very intimidating. You know, you're going to go in and get tested, like you were saying, like they're going to give you some kind of a theological test or something. There's just a lot of misunderstandings about the Catholic Church today. I think it was Fulton Sheen who said there are not 100 people in America who hate the Catholic Church but only hate but millions in America hate what they perceive the Catholic Church to be.
Yes.
So the perceptions are getting broken through with the information that's allowed to be transferred through the internet. I think that's a huge part of it.
I'm really glad to hear you say that, because I've talked about this before. We had a gentleman on who was a convert to Catholicism from Mormonism. He wrote a great book about it. And he said the best thing that ever happened to the Catholic Church is the internet.
Yeah.
Because you can find out the truth. He said anybody can look it up and go, oh, that the thing that my pastor's been saying for 40 years, that's actually not what the Catholic Church, like if, you right. know, or the early church wasn't Pentecostal. It had Pentecostal elements, but it was Catholic right from the beginning. What do you think? Does that convincing to you, Patrick, or what do you think?
It was a great answer. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's always good talking with you, Patrick. I hope we'll see you in September.
You will.
Oh, yeah, very good. Patrick's coming to our conference. We got our every September. You should come down.
I'll be
to
there.
Our
conference.
Are you going to be there?
I already have my ticket.
Okay. Maybe we could do a meetup with your fans there.
Sure.
Oh, so you're doing meetups now?
Well, you said it on air, so now I have to.
Yeah, that's exactly right. If you want to come to our conference, CatholicAnswersConference.com, and use the promo code EARLY, and you can get $50 off your ticket, CatholicAnswersConference.com. We're talking with Adrian Lawson from Sips with Sarah, a wonderful YouTube channel. Tell me about your listenership. Tell me about how many listen and how many watch. Like, if you post a video, how many will watch it? How many subscribers you got, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm almost at 30,000 subscribers. We're at like 29,000 something. As far as like average views, typically from anywhere from a few thousand to sometimes if it does really well, it might get 70,000 views or something if something really pops off. But that's generally it. The demographics tend to be early, like 25 to 35, maybe 18 to 35 is like the largest range demographic that I have.
And 18 to 35, you might, this is not going to happen every time, but you might have a day where something you put out reaches 70,000 18 to 35 year olds with a conversation about the Eucharist or a conversation about confession or that's magnificent. Like we just never had that before. That's never existed before. And it's exciting to think that any one of those 70,000 could be getting over their final obstacle or taking for the first time thinking, oh, this could be for me. Maybe Jesus does want to meet me in the Eucharist in a Catholic church.
Yeah, I find that with a lot of people. It's either people who are, you know, early Catholics who are just trying to learn more about their faith because they're trying to defend the faith against maybe their family and friends who are against their conversion, Or it's people who are like, I'm pretty much on board. I just need to have these couple of last questions that I need wrapped up for me. Or, you know, I'm going through OCIA, but there's some things that I'm just not clear on. Those are kind of the people that tend to come to my channel, and I love it.
Very, very good. Let's go to Jason in Miami, Florida, watching on YouTube. Jason, welcome. Go ahead with your question.
Hey, so I'm joining OCIA. I just sent my application papers on Monday. So nice. I'm learning all these Catholic teachings. I've come to understand a lot of them regarding the Eucharist, but this is a little silly. I still don't really understand, and this isn't exclusive for Catholics. Why are we eating the Eucharist? Because I understand it contains the real presence of Christ. So that is kind of just like a hurdle that I've had that I still don't really understand.
Oh,
like why are we eating?
Yes, Jason, I'm gonna let Adrian answer that. But you're in very, very good company. Like this, this is one of those areas where God asks a lot of us. This requires a great deal of us, and makes it a great question. So, are you asking why did God do it this way, or just for what does it mean that we're eating Christ in the Eucharist?
I guess both. I know okay. It comes from Jesus' words that we're to eat it, but
right.
it's something that is a little weird to me. Not that I don't adhere to the teaching or anything, but just something I want to learn more about and why we do it.
Wonderful.
Yeah. I mean, I'll say if your Eucharistic theology isn't a little bit weird, then you're probably not doing it right.
Yeah, it's probably not the Eucharist that you're talking about.
Right. So the Eucharist, we notice that Jesus institutes the Eucharist at the Last Supper, which is actually a Passover meal, which is a commemoration a feast in memoriam of the original Passover that happened in Exodus. And in Exodus, we learned that to save your firstborn from being, you know, harmed by the angel of death that was going to take the firstborn of Egypt as the final plague on Egypt before the Jews were freed, to have the sacrifice of the Passover be effective and actually have its intended effect, you had to consume the lamb that was sacrificed during that Passover. And unless you consumed the entire lamb, it wasn't, there was no, you know, positive consequence of that. So Jesus as the new lamb, which he's called multiple times in the New Testament, in Revelation, I believe it's in 1 Corinthians as well, he's repeatedly called the new lamb. I mean, John the Baptist calls him the Lamb of God that takes away the sins of the world. So now as the new lamb, his sacrifice, we receive the benefits of that through consuming his flesh and blood in the Eucharist. And so the Jesus and his sacrifice is a fulfillment of the original Passover. This is the new Passover, because now we have a new exodus out of slavery from sin instead of slavery from Egypt.
And so when they sacrificed the lamb, they ate it.
Yes.
Oh, I gotcha. Okay, Jason, we can continue the conversation. I just want to know, did that get in the ballpark of what you were looking for? This is a big topic.
Oh, yeah, that makes complete sense, because I guess it's true. It's like a fulfillment. I'm doing the Bible in a year with Mike Schmitz. I'm like
nice.
On day 200, so I haven't gotten too much into the Eucharist yet. So it is like that helps me a lot, yeah.
First of all, I'm just so happy that you mentioned Father Mike Schmitz, because there it is again, that this is something that never could have existed before. Technology made it possible, and there's a faithful Catholic priest who, along with Jeff Cavins and all the folks over there at, that's Ascension Press, right?
That does it.
And then here's Jason. He has access to that. Did you, Jason, were you originally drawn towards the Catholic Church because of internet stuff that you encountered, or how did it happen?
No, actually, it's a pretty crazy story. My girlfriend is Catholic. She grew up Catholic. And I grew up, my father, I guess he's Seventh-day Adventist and very anti-Catholic group. So I had all these anti-Catholic beliefs growing up. So I actually started looking into all, you know, what does the Catholic Church teach about this and this, to try to show her, hey, you believe in all these crazy anti-biblical things. And it wasn't until then that I was like, okay, wait, a lot of what they're saying makes complete sense. And that's when I really started going into all of the church teaching.
What a great story, Jason. It does. I almost feel like this should be something that the Catholic churches encourage, is like, try to disprove it. Because how many times do you hear somebody say, I set out to show so-and-so how dumb the Catholic Church is, and then I started thinking, oh, it's not that dumb.
Yeah,
it's not, it actually makes sense. Jason, I'll tell you what, I'd like to send you one of our books. Thank you for the call. I'll send you The Early Church Was the Catholic Church. If you would like it, all you have to do is hang on, give us an address, and if there's ever a way we can be helpful to you as you're working your way towards full communion with the Catholic Church, call again. We'd love to talk with you. Our guest, Adrian Lawson from Sips with Sarah, we're talking about the Eucharist, 888-318-7884.
Hello, this is Archbishop Salvatore Cordiglione of San Francisco. Keep your dial tuned to Catholic Answers Live.
In Morse code, the sequence SOS is a distress call. It's been said that it stands for Save Our Souls. Well, right now our world is in big trouble, and we're putting out an SOS call for help. Will you answer that call? St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, has hundreds of teams who share the good news with souls who don't know Jesus. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. Visit streetevangelization.com to get involved.
James the Less.
Pardon my language.
Is back for more.
I like the haircut.
He has a long way to go, but there's still hope.
You guys have so many customs.
Nuns don't date.
My world has sort of been turned upside down, and I'm starting to like it.
So you are praying.
I'm learning.
James the Less, Season 2.
Pray for us.
Streaming now at EWTN.com/James the Less.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I just want to follow up on something I mentioned before, and then I couldn't finish my mention of it because I couldn't remember a name. But I said there was a wonderful interview that Abby Cornish did on CNN about why the Catholic Church is so hot today. Abby Cornish is going to do what she does, but her guest, I thought, was brilliant. Christine Emba is her name, and she had, and I wasn't convinced by all of her answers or anything, but I did think that they were all respectful. I have to say something that I really liked Christine Emba. She's very, very, very smart and very fair. But one of the things that Abby Cornish kept pushing her on, and I didn't think she pushed back on this, so I assume she accepted it, was that young men are attracted to the Catholic Church because they feel left behind in society, and the Catholic Church teaches traditional gender roles for men and women, and that's what young men want. They want basically to – and I don't know what they mean by traditional. I mean, do they mean that the women have the babies, you know, which is a tradition because it's a biological fact, or do they mean traditional, like 1950s housewife or something, which is not in any way a Christian tradition? So right. I don't know what they meant by that, but does that make any sense to you? Like, do you think, why are young men coming into the Catholic Church? There's lots of young people coming in, but it's very notable that young men are, because young men are traditionally one of the least religious groups.
Right. I think it's a little bit to the 1950s kind of, gender roles thing. But I think it's also just that there's something masculine about the Catholic Church in a lot of ways. And in some ways it's not. But in a lot of ways it's this, there's a lot of talk about, you know, spiritual warfare and the Archangel Michael, you know, defend us in battle, thrusting the enemies of God into hell. And like all like this, there's a lot of battle terminology and imagery, which I think is appealing to young men. And it makes sense that we are in a spiritual battle. And so it gives you, you know, a purpose in life. You're a warrior in a sense for Christ and all of these different things. But I do think it's also a response to some of the radical feminism that we've seen in recent times.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you're a woman, you don't need a man, you don't need to have kids. And if you want to have kids, you can have it without a man because we have all this technology now, which is terrible. But they don't think it's terrible. So it's a response to that and say, no, I'm a man. I do want a woman with traditional values who, you know, who wouldn't mind if she wants to, you know, work or not work and have kids and raise the kids and I'll be the provider. You know, there's kind of a desire to go back to that because the pendulum has swung so far in the opposite direction that we need to balance it out a little bit.
That's very, very interesting. I will say this. Two things I would like to say about that. If young men are attracted to the 1950s model, they should learn their history. That's a terrible model. We should never go back to the 1950s model of the nuclear family. That is not how family is supposed to work. That's not how society is supposed to work. And it made many women lonely and isolated in suburban homes where they didn't have other people.
Right.
But the other side of that is men can't have babies. If a man wants to have a family, he must find a woman who will have babies.
Are we allowed to say that? Men can't have babies?
It's California. I might be under...
you know what? Right now.
All the cops are up in L.A. at that thing, so nobody's going to bother me. But... do you see what I'm saying? Like, is that a traditional thing, or is that just I cannot fulfill my role as a father, which is what a man, you know, not all men, but predominantly a man wants to be. If I don't marry someone who's willing to produce children with me, that's not being mean to women. That's like, that's what men need.
Right.
And the world can't go on. If men and women don't get what they need,
it literally
can't go on. Like we're one generation from it being over if everybody says no to that.
Yeah, I don't think it comes from a place of wanting to be mean to women or anything like that. I think it's just a desire to let's get back to something a little bit normal, like before.
Yeah,
you know, radical feminism came about.
Right. This is that's the primary problem with radical feminism is that it made the normal seem abnormal.
Mm.
Like, oh, I'm a man. I would like to be the defender, helper. And breadwinner.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's abnormal. No, actually, that's just normal. That's a biological fact of men. That's what they want.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not bad because they want that.
Right.
Would you tell these young men, the 1950s, that's a terrible idea. Don't go back. If you want to go back to the 1850s where men and women worked together, where they worked on the farm together, or they shared life together.
The home is, I mean, especially if you have a farm at home, it's a project of providing for your own family, and it's not the man's job to take care of the home or the woman's job to take care of the home, but it's something that you build together as a family.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really don't like that division of labor kind of mentality of these are your category of work and this is my category of work, because sometimes you need help. And your wife can help out in your category of work, or she needs help, and you can help out over there. And we don't need to be that, dogmatic about these lines all the time.
All right. So I'm glad we tackled that, but let's get to a couple more phone calls here. Scott is in Port Smith, Virginia, listening to EWTN on channel 130, Sirius XM satellite radio. Hey, Scott, you got a question for our guest, Adrian Lawson?
Yes, I had a question about what he thinks of the National Eucharistic Congress, the protesters from Waco that are following it, and if he had any of those views about the Eucharist, the protesters' views before he became Catholic or before he entered the Catholic Church.
Okay.
So I've heard of the Eucharistic Congress. I think it's great. It's beautiful. The more we can get people thinking about the Eucharist and learning more about the Eucharist, because there are a lot of misunderstandings, and I think that's beautiful. I'm not familiar with the protesters that you're talking about, though. What are some of their views?
They're a fundamentalist Protestant sect where they're talking about the Eucharist being idol worship. I think it's a little bit beyond just merely saying it's a symbol. They're pretty hardcore in their beliefs. But the idol worship is the one thing, sort of like a chick track type of approach mentality, from my understanding.
You familiar with chick tracks?
Yes.
Okay.
I've heard.
Jack, for anybody that doesn't know, the reference to chick tracks is Jack Chick, who wrote anti-Catholic cartoons and published them.
Yep. Yeah, I've heard of that view. I never held that myself because I benefited from my own ignorance, but I never knew about this position of the Eucharist, that people thought it was actually the body and blood of Christ. So when I learned of that, and I learned of the history behind it, and that it actually does go back to the first century and to the Bible itself, then I actually just thought it was beautiful, and I immediately was just like drawn to it. I never had any rebellion against it, but I think that's unfortunate that people are calling, you know, Jesus himself an idol, which is that's very sad.
Okay. Scott.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you for I looked it up while I just looked on the pillar and I didn't know about it, Scott. Mm-hmm. So I'm very glad to be informed about that. So thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's interesting. Protesting the Eucharist because it seems to be idolatry.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk about that. This is based off of, ancient pagan gods or something like that. Which, when you look into those claims, there's no evidence to that. They try to say...
No, that's mythicism, right? We call that, yeah.
Yeah. There's no actual scholars that have studied those ancient pagan religions that would say that this is, inspired by those at all.
No, of course it's not, right? But I often get mad and feel mad when people say things about the Catholic Church that are not true. They say, do you worship Mary? And we say, we do not worship Mary. We have a very specific theology of that. Latria is reserved for God alone. So we do not worship Mary. And they'll say, well, you do worship Mary.
Right.
Now, that makes me mad. But when somebody says, I hate you Catholics because you believe the Eucharist is Jesus Christ, I don't feel mad at them. I feel like, well, you're right. That is what we believe.
Yeah.
If you're going to hate us for the right reason, for what we actually believe. And sure. I'll never deny that that's what we believe. Yes, that's exactly what we believe. You should believe it too, because that's what Christ did.
Yeah.
And he's God. He has the power to do it. But in a certain way, I kind of prefer that to all the goofy stuff.
Yeah.
There's just so many goofy things that are said about the Catholic, you're re-sacrificing Christ. It doesn't matter how many times you explain that, mm-hmm. they'll say, no, that's not really what, my pastor told me that what, okay, well, right. I don't know what your pastor told you, but when they say, I just can't accept this Eucharist thing, I think, okay, well, at least you're on the right thing. That's the truth about us. The
right.
truth is we do believe that.
Yeah. And if we're wrong, then we have a problem. If we're wrong and the Eucharist really isn't Jesus, then that is idolatry.
Yeah.
But it is. He tells us himself.
Right.
That's the thing. And if it is idolatry and we're wrong, then that means that the church has been idolatrous from its very conception, from the first century. Everybody who's written on the Eucharist from the first century and even, up until now, most Christians believe that the Eucharist really is Jesus. So if most of the church has been wrong this entire time, then we have way bigger problems.
Right, right. It's amazing that error persisted from the first day, from St. Paul himself writing about it, through all the early church fathers. And it was only in 1517 that we discovered that might not be true. That's a pretty amazing theology. But the other thing is Jesus holds... bread in his hands and says, this is my body. So even if you don't believe today we have the Eucharist, what was Jesus? God himself said, this is my body. He didn't say, this is like my body. This is a symbol. He said, this is my body. So are you saying, that was his body, but the one you have now is not his body? But you can't. He said the words. I didn't say them. The Pope didn't say them. The Pope does say them, but
yeah, true.
At least once a day the Pope says
them. Priest, yeah.
But do you see what I'm saying? What was Jesus saying?
Right. And that gets into all kinds of other issues of, okay, well, let's say somebody does agree that that one instance was actually his body. Well, do you think he only did that so that it could be done that one time and never again?
And then what did he mean by do this in memory of me?
Right.
But I can't get over the word is. He said, this is my body.
Right, which he didn't do any
so
other time.
So what is it? If you said to him, what is it? What would he say to you? He'd say, I just told you what it is.
Right.
So do you... I guess I could I could understand if someone said, yes, that was his body. But this one that you do, it's not his body. Mm. Well, why?
Right.
Why do the miracle one time and not do it perpetually?
Yeah, and then from there why would he do it this one time and not perpetually in the same way with the church? Why would he give the apostles authority? Do you believe the apostles had more authority than the average Christian? I would hope even Protestants would say yes. Okay, well, do you think that authority just ended with them? Did he only establish a church to last until the apostles passed away and then it was kind of a free-for-all? Obviously not.
No.
So
are these the kind of things you talk about on Sips with Sarah?
Yes.
Yes?
Yeah, I actually just finished doing, and I'll probably do more, but a whole playlist of live streams where I'm going through these topics. So I went through apostolic succession, The Eucharist, confession, where is this in the Bible? What did the early church believe about this? Just to have some very, you know, plainly presented information out there that people can go to and see, okay, well, if I want to look into this, where you know, Catholics do this weird thing today called confession, where does that come from? And then they can go and find my video on that, and hopefully it's helpful.
So is it a lot of sacramental? Is it mostly focused on sacraments or other parts of the Catholic faith as well?
Other parts as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
We've been having a conversation. I must say, Adrian, I really enjoyed the conversation. I enjoy your company very much, and I'm glad you're doing what you're doing. So thank you for coming in here.
Thank you for having me.
Adrian Lawson has been our guest this hour. You can find him on Sips with Sarah. I hope you will check it out. If you know someone who's interested in the Catholic faith, whether they are Catholic or not, this is a very good YouTube channel for them, Sips with Sarah, part of a real revolution in media that I must say I'm very impressed that young Catholics have taken this up and they're doing a great job with it. Coming up, Tim Staples, it's Ask Me Anything, so ask him anything. Just dial the phone, 888-318-7884.